Thank you very much, Saramati and Monisha, for two very full and thought-provoking talks. There's lots of stuff in there for us to chew over. Time is short now, so I'm going to just ask, are there any immediate responses from the panel? And then open it up to the floor for comments, questions.
I've got one immediate response, a question for Saramati. I was very interested in the distinction that you were making, but I can remember the terminology between revalorization on the one hand and appropriation on the other. I remember a conference a few years ago and hearing Norman Fisher raising the same issue, saying when he got involved in Buddhism in the 70s, it was an absolute fringe, or in the 60s, an absolute fringe activity. And now he says, you know, every local church is running yoga classes, you know, everybody knows somebody who's learned meditation. And then he raised that up a really interesting question. He said, so if you look at that, are you looking at Buddhism adapting to the culture, or are you looking at Buddhism being watered down by the culture? And then he said, and how do you tell the difference between the two of those? And I think the example that you gave of the French perfume, in a way it states it so extremely that that's clear, you're arguing that anything that appropriates to support greed, hatred and delusion is, you know, like on one box on the right hand side, and anything that uses the language of the culture to communicate is on the other box. But it seems to me it's not always, or maybe not even often, that clear cut. If you look at things like mindfulness-based stress reduction, where the method has been taken out of its, as it were, its more transcendental context. If you look at John Kabat-Zinn's work, I suppose I'm just interested in Norman Fisher's question of, in that middle ground, how do you tell the difference?
I agree with you. That is the question. And that was one reason why I wanted to bring out the fact that this cultural engagement is inevitably a two-way street, and it's also, in a sense, a race. In this case, whether or not a dharmic understanding of these Buddhist concepts and images will succeed in establishing itself, it's been so co-opted by the business as usual culture to its own ends, that they've lost their bite, they've lost their edge, they've lost their ability to present themselves as an alternative. So the first question I would ask is this Buddhist image, this Buddhist idea, whether identified as such or not, has it got any bite? Is it challenging the prevailing culture, or is it in whatever way, maybe even quite unconsciously or even insidiously supporting prevailing cultural views? You mentioned John Kabat-Zinn. I'm especially fascinated by this middle ground that you're referring to, where it is so hard to tell, because it's kind of like, you know, the distant enemies, the far enemies are easy to see. It's the near enemies that are always the hardest to recognize. John Kabat-Zinn's notion of stealth Buddhism is one that it keeps turning around in my head. I understand what he's trying to do and why, but I just can't affirm it for the very reason you're pointing out.
I have a comment which is on a similar, again, to Saramati. I do thought for the day, talks on the radio, responding to current affairs issues, and just picking up your description of definition of Buddhism as a deconstructive cultural critique. So what you do with these talks is you look in the paper and see what's going on, and you think, what can I say from a Buddhist point of view? And actually, it's very easy to be deconstructed. There's a war going on. You give a talk saying hatred is not overcome by hatred, etc. There are many problems in the world. And what you can then do is assume a kind of morally superior stance, where you say war, poverty, whatever, bad, Buddhism, good. And I think that's a danger. I mean, I try and avoid it, but it's a danger if you take a if you see your position as being a deconstructive and critical one. And I'm wondering I'm looking for ways to articulate what Buddhism has to offer that aren't just deconstructive and aren't simply revalorizing aspects of Western culture, but are a positive contribution. So I just mentioned that as maybe another perspective on the whole question.
Very briefly, I did mention two things. The first thing I mentioned was the idea of the Dharma as a set of principles that do have universal applicability, and that's what I would see as the positive side. That has to then be framed in terms that are understandable within the current cultural context. And that's where I think the critical deconstructive side becomes very important, because it's what enables us to make the distinctions that need to be made when we're seeking to identify those aspects of the business as usual culture that by their very nature, by their assumptions, are contrary to the principles of the Dharma. So that's a short answer. It's a big question, but I'd like to hear from other people too.
I'd like to pick up on Bishop Harney and add something, and it's a word I want to add, Rapturdom, by the way. And it's globalization. Like, I think everybody in this room, I can rejoice in the spread of the Dharma in the West, and we might call it globalization, Buddhism. On the other hand, I think we have to be careful what we're spreading. I think this is the message that's been coming across this morning. I will tell you about an experience. I'm currently doing a doctorate research in spirituality and bereavement, and this week I was at the British Library reading, and two books have struck me. One book was written by a Christian academic, and it was Dialogue by Christians with Buddhism. And the three first papers in the book were by Christians, what they obtained from Buddhism. Meditation, good. Reflection, good. And so on. They then immediately, in each of those three papers, translated them into Christian terms, prayer, contemplation. Meditation couldn't quite translate, because there doesn't seem to be anything Christianity that says about meditation. So I thought, well, this is sort of good. They've got something here. The next three papers in the same book were Buddhist responses to those first three. And what I rejoiced in, they were all clear. All three of them brought us back to the true Dharma, the principle of the Dharma, greed, hatred, and delusion, and no God, no creator God. They actually said something sympathetic and encouraging to the Christians, but they brought, and I was really pleased to see this. So it brought, the Buddhist message was there for me. The second book I was reading on the same day, again by a Christian academic, had two dialogues. One with a Dominican friar living in Sri Lanka, who is very well versed in Buddhism, and in fact lectures to Buddhists in Sri Lanka. And what I read of his writing, I was very impressed with. He understood the Dharma and he related it. But he was also still a Dominican friar. The second one I was concerned about, and that's the point I'm making, was a lecture or a dialogue with Thich Nhat Hanh. And like the Dalai Lama, my problem for years has been with Thich Nhat Hanh. He uses the word God without really understanding what it means to be brought up in a Western culture, what God means. And I was left very much more concerned about what Thich Nhat Hanh, the confusion that could have come out of any Christian reading that. It's all the same. And I think that's where the Dalai Lama has made the mistakes in some of the statements he's made, where he's brought God in. So we've got to get back to the principles when we're talking about, whether we're talking to Christians or whether we're talking to anybody else, we keep with the principles.
Dhammapatiya. Picking up on the quotation that Manisha said from, that often gets quoted from the Dalai Lama about, don't bother about converting to another religion, just practice your own religion more thoroughly. That's how we often receive it in, you know, quotations. But what he actually says, if you hear him say the whole sentence, is, but if your religion, the one you're born to, doesn't work for you, by all means change to something else. But don't knock what you're leaving for the people for whom it does work. And he makes this point quite strongly, that any religion is better than no religion. He's a Buddhist. For him, Buddhism is best. And if it works for you, do change. But if you're changing, don't pull the rug out from other people who stay with what you're leaving. And it's the bit that the press forgets to add. And I think, in a way, what Ratnachula has just been saying, particularly about the first book, where people encourage, I think we do, you know, we're fortunate, we have something that works for us. Other people have things that work for them. It might not work for us. And I think some of us leave Christianity because we have had bad experiences. And so it's quite a practice to not force that onto other people. So I think it's just nice to know. I've heard the Dalai Lama say a whole sentence, and I was really encouraged by it, because I am unhappy when we hear other spiritual leaders apparently being confused, and actually it's just they're not being completely quoted. So I think that's just worth remembering.
I was very interested actually in Saramati's description of the Dharma as cultural critique, and the whole description of how, you know, it works against, or works with greed, hatred and delusion reasserting itself all the time. The question that occurred to me is, what do you think the place of the Dharma as cultural critique is as within our FWO culture? How you think it can work, how we can make it work better because we're object to greed and hatred and delusion as anyone else is. So how we can make sure that the FWBO culture does reassert itself on the basis of this Dharmic critique. And I'm Jayajina.
Again, trying to be very brief. One of the aspects of the Dharma that I've always appreciated and that I've heard other non-Buddhist Westerners comment on is that, like some aspects of Western culture, science, for example, the Dharma, at its best, seeks to be self-corrective or self-critical. And I think we've got an excellent opportunity of demonstrating this to ourselves, among ourselves, and looking at our own practice, not just our own personal practice, but our collective practice of how we present the Dharma, how we represent the Dharma to other Buddhists and to the Western culture at large. Many, many things we do are very, very good, but I think we can, there's a lot that we could do better if we think about what's a more dharmic way to get to the outcome that we want to have, which is the establishment of some genuine, authentic sense of dharmic values in Western culture.
Hello, Pranal. I wonder if you could say something about whether you think we in the order, or in the friends, are struggling or suffering or whatever with
values coming in from the outside culture, such as individualism, pseudo-egalitarianism, and relativism being the three that I'm sort of thinking about at the moment. Pamajot. Probably not.
Consumerism?
I think it's a really big question, actually. And yeah, I think we do have to be vigilant. I think Bhante said a lot about that over the years. And yeah, I think that has been addressed to quite an extent by Saramati's talk. It's something we just have to carry and be vigilant. And I think the enemies, if you like, of the Dharma have changing faces. And it's important to kind of keep having a strong enough sense of our own ethics and our own values to be able to critique things from that point of view, both internally, personally, and collectively.
I would like to thank all of the other panelists for their participation, and also thank you for your interest and your participation in this discussion, which will carry on.